Welcome to Perth Symphony's Music on the Move, a podcast for you, our audience and followers, to learn more about the concerts you're about to experience or the things we get up to. I'm Bawby Webster, CEO and founder of Perth Symphony Orchestra. Music on the Move is a way to meet our musicians, gain insight into our concerts, and catch gossip from behind the scenes, all aimed at giving you a much greater insight into the world of our incredible orchestra. Remember, you can join the conversation throughout any concert or at any time, sharing thoughts and photos to Instagram, Facebook and Twitter using @PerthSymphony or #PerthSymphony, and keep up to date with all Perth Symphony's activities at perthsymphony.com. To ensure you never miss a note, please subscribe to Perth Symphony Orchestra wherever you're listening from, and why not rate us and review us while you're there? Welcome to Perth Symphony's Music on the Move. I couldn't be more excited about my guest on our Music on the Move podcast today. I'm actually going to get you to say who you are and what you do, because there are letters before, there are letters after, and I think in your email signature, there are like five job titles. Bruce, who are you?
Bawby, thanks for having me along today. So my name is Bruce Weber, Dr. Bruce Weber, if you want to use that first title. I am a principal research scientist at CSIRO. I work in land and water there and health and biosecurity. I'm a program director at the Western Australian Biodiversity Science Institute, or WABSI. And I'm an adjunct associate professor at the University of Western Australia.
And you do this all every week, or...?
I just put whatever hat I need on at the time and away I go. Sometimes I wear two hats.
Well, do you know, look, it's fantastic, and I couldn't be more honoured to talk to you, Bruce. But, you know, with all those titles, it's clear that you are someone who is so passionate about what you do, because to be that interested in being involved with different organisations and taking on those roles. So we've got you along today because you are going to be one of our guest interviewed people at our next concert performance for the planet, where we are attempting to talk science and environment using a stunning music soundtrack. So we're doing an experiment. We are a science experiment. Our next concert is. But you're coming along to talk specifically about biodiversity. Is this your sort of area of specialisation, your passion? How did you get into this?
Gosh, I've been in this area for a very long time. Not as a profession, it's dominated my life. I started off life heavily influenced by the natural world around me. I was a regular fan of watching David Attenborough movies all the time. He's an inspiration for me. I spent a lot of my youth in forests or in dams or collecting animals or watching animals or poking them. And to actually take a lifelong passion and turn it into what is now a career is really exciting. And I think particularly now to be able to use that interest in a really applied way to help look after as best I can the biodiversity that we have left, and to make sure that we have as much of that biodiversity for future generations. That's what gets me out of bed every day, and that's what I'm hoping to do.
So as a senior research, that was your job title at CSIRO.
One of them.
This is just one of your job titles. This implies that you're simply researching, but you've just used the word applied. So clearly you're doing research very specifically to achieve an outcome. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
That is, it's been a really interesting journey for me, that shift from where I started off, and really that, to be fair, was research for research's sake. Fascinating stuff, having a huge amount of fun. But I think the one thing that has really drawn me to the CSIRO is that we do research to have real impact and to drive on-ground outcomes. And where that change came for me, if you've got the time, we can share a little story around this. I was deep in the rainforests of Cameroon, doing field work in Central Africa. I'd been there. We were living in France at the time, and I was working there with a couple of colleagues. And that was really where I was developing my interests in interactions And so my background started off as a botanist. I work a lot on plants, but I've always had a passion for animals as well. And developing an interest on plant-animal interactions, or what goes on between plants and animals in the world around us.
So there is an interaction. It's not just cow eat grass. Forgive my ignorance.
Everything interacts. Everything interacts. And the best thing about interactions is that you can't catch an interaction and put it on display in a museum. So that means you have to go out to some of the most beautiful parts of the world and study those interactions in those wonderful places. And so here I was in the rainforests of Cameroon, and at the time I was looking at the interactions between a really rare plant species, and this really rare plant species maintains hollow stems and it produces little droplets of sugar on the plant. And in those stems lives an ant, and the ant drinks the sugar and it raises little small hemipterans, they're little scale-like insects, and they also produce stuff for the ant to eat. But if you can imagine eating a diet that is pretty much only sugar, it's not really balanced. And so what we
I was going to say, do they move really fast? You've got these ants on a sugar high all the time. Yeah.
But so what they do in their gut is that they have a really interesting gut microflora. And the gut then turns that really narrow diet into a very balanced diet. And so we were studying the interaction between the plant and the ant and the microflora in its guts, an amazing little ecosystem, and absolutely fascinating, without a doubt. But we were living in this tiny little village. It took 2 to 3 days to get there, and we were staying as a guest of the headman, and it was a really honourable place to stay, living with the village chief. And he came to us, and this is keep this in mind, 15 years of research we'd been doing in this location. And he came to us and he said, "Oh, look, guys, I think I really need to increase the amount of money we earn in the village. We've got requirements just to maintain our quality of life. And I think we're going to need to cut down this rainforest and plant some palm oil." And so here was I in the middle of Cameroon doing this really interesting research. And here was a real threat to what we were doing. And so from then on, I really thought, okay, it's great to do research for research sake, but if we can also make that research applied as well, then we can really make sure what biodiversity we do have left, and we've lost a lot already, but mm-hmm. what's left we can conserve.
Absolutely. And my gosh, what an amazing story. You know, having said, I was literally just about to say, gosh, I bet you haven't done anything as glorious as Cameroon, but actually that segues into the fact that I've been told that Western Australia is the most exciting place for biodiversity, that what might look like an arid landscape to us is home to an extraordinary, or rather inordinate, large number of species and flora and fauna and all that kind of stuff. Tell us a little bit about Western Australia and what makes it so special.
It is absolutely a special place. I got here around 10 years ago and was extremely excited to arrive. I looked north to the Kimberley and the wonderful landscapes that we have across the Kimberley, and I looked simply around us here in Perth in the southwest. We live in a global biodiversity hotspot. We are absolutely blessed with an amazing diversity of plants and animals right around us, very close to Perth.
How is that measured? Forgive me for interrupting. Is it that we have a larger number of species than anywhere else? Is it that they're more diverse, or is it that they're more unique?
So it is a large number of species, that's one on one hand, but I think the other element to it, and the really important element, is that it's recognised that there is considerable threat to those species, and that gives us an opportunity to maybe do something about that. So yes, we are blessed to have that wonderful diversity, but yes, we have a responsibility to do something about it as well.
So let's join that into your research part of your job. What is it on a day-to-day basis that your job would entail? What is it that you're researching, and how are you applying that to actually preserving that biodiversity?
So it's really nice. So I guess in my research role at CSIRO, what I do there, and to put it simply, is I essentially try and work out why a plant is where it is. What are the factors, what are the interactions with all the animals around it that keep it there? And I use that knowledge against weeds and introduced plants to find out their vulnerabilities, to remove them from the landscape, because weeds are particularly threatening to the native plants we have and to some of the native animals we have. And the more we can control them and manage them, the more our native biodiversity is going to thrive. Equally, I use that knowledge for really rare and threatened plants to work out how we can build their resilience to keep them in the landscape for much longer. So in my role at CSIRO, that's what we do. We're on the front line. We're spread right across the Kimberley. We do a lot of work in the Pilbara and we do a lot of work in the southwest. And we get to some incredible locations. We collaborate.
I was going to say, what's the balance between office or lab work and location work?
It's very variable because we have to work with the seasons. There are certain places where it's really hard to get to. For example, many parts of the Kimberley are largely off limits at the moment when the wet season's going. Tracks are closed and we can't get to them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's very seasonal in terms of the field work we do, but that gives us the opportunity back in the lab to catch up with our lab experiments and to catch up with our data collation as well.
And we're probably reporting too.
We do the odd bit of reporting, yes.
I know that from my school days at science. Write a report on. Tell us about a really cool plant that maybe we don't know exists in WA. What's the kind of coolest kid on the block you've come across?
Well, look, again, I like to move beyond just the numbers, and I like to go to the stories and the interactions, because that's where the things start to get really exciting for me. I think some of the most advanced intimate interactions have to be of the orchids that we have here in the southwest of WA. They're amazing in terms of what they've done to achieve reproduction, and in plants we call that pollination. We've got a large number of orchids, a couple of hundred orchids here, that use animals to help them pollinate, but not in the way that we imagine that, as bees and the like. They use sexual deception for their pollination, and they do this with wasps. And so the orchids are absolutely phenomenal. Evolution has taken them on an amazing path. And what they do morphologically, so the shape of the flower is generally looks a little bit like a female wasp. But what they've also done is that they've made certain chemicals that mimic the sex pheromones of wasps. And they release these sex pheromones. And you can imagine what that does to a male wasp. They come from far and away.
Wow.
And so they try to copulate with these flowers. Yeah, and they're brought in. They do that with one flower. In the process of doing that, they get covered in the pollen from that flower. They then take it to another orchid flower, try and do the same thing again, and end up achieving pollination. And through that, the orchid goes on. But again, that system is under threat. Because equal as intimate as that interaction is, the wasp also lays its young in a beetle larvae, which is a little bit macabre, but the young wasps grow up inside that beetle larvae, and in some situations that can actually just be one specific species of beetle. And so you can see there's a really intimate set of interactions going on here, and all three partners need each other.
Yeah.
And so if we disrupt any of that through land clearing or climate change or any of these other factors, and you lose one of those partners in that interaction, then there's huge flow-on effects for the other. So we can sit here and we can look at one individual orchid, or we can look at one individual wasp or beetle and think, gosh, we've got to look after that. But more importantly, we've got to try and manage and at least try and understand a lot of the interactions that keep our ecosystems functioning and keep them intact. And I think every time I walk out into the field, I see a new interaction or see something that's unknown and undescribed. And so the danger we face in a world where global change, where climate change and land clearing and all of these other issues, introduced animals, introduced weeds, continue to provide new threats to our environment. In some situations, we're in danger of losing things before we even know they're there.
Absolutely.
And that's really sad.
Gosh, what incredible work. And, you know, I think that the starting point is people understanding and knowing, you know, that what steps can then be taken are enormous, because it might just simply be, well, just stop encroaching on nature. But, yeah. The reality is it is hard to do that, you know, with population growth and housing estates being built everywhere. But simply as long, you know, even having that step of being aware that we have such a fragile ecosystem that is so precious, that I am sure in that string of relationships that you're talking about somehow gets to us as well. And, you know,
absolutely. And that's where things get really exciting for me, because in my role at WBSI, part of my job there is...
Just explain WBSI again. That is...
Western Australian Biodiversity Science Institute.
Thank you.
So our role at WBSI is to help put people who have questions, or organisations who have questions that can be answered by research, in contact with researchers who can answer those questions. So our organisation acts like as a facilitator and an enabler.
Yeah.
And we prioritise issues for biodiversity right across the state, and we make sure the most pressing questions can be addressed.
Brilliant.
So on that side of things, it's not front-end science for me, but the impact we can have is far broader.
Mm.
We can reach a whole other level in that regard. And some of the impacts we're having there are on the urban landscapes. And I'm working with a whole range of motivated and amazingly passionate organisations across the urban landscapes in Perth. We live in a very threatened region. We have remnant Banksia woodland right across the city. We need to protect that. We need to ensure that those patches that remain can stay connected together. We have an amazing population of Carnaby's cockatoos that depends on those and that really needs looking after. But there's a lot we still don't know about how these things work. But the nice thing for me at WBSI is that I can help bring a lot of those parties together, and we can find solutions that work for everyone, including clever infill.
Yes.
There's many examples of how we can substantially increase population density within even our given current city footprint,
yeah,
without damaging the remaining environment that we have left. And I think one of the great examples that we've just had, we've actually rediscovered a presumed extinct bee in one of the small Banksia woodland fragments in the northern suburbs of Perth.
Incredible.
Just late last year, and the results have just come out. So this was a bee that was thought to be extinct, last seen on Rottnest Island over 80 years ago. And one of my PhD students at the University of UWA was out in the field. She caught one of these bees, and we've now confirmed it's
amazing.
Actually that original bee. So it's back.
That must be one of those moments in your career where your heart sings, where, you know, if you thought something was extinct for 80 years and you make that kind of discovery.
Yeah.
And, you know, look, and I love how actually there are people across Western Australia taking the work that scientists like yourself are doing and trying to share that, because I know the emblem of the fringe this year was a bee, and that was in light of the need to preserve bees, you know, the work that's being done in Western Australia, how special, you know, and important it is. So I love that something like Fringe, who reaches, you know, several hundred thousand people, were in some very accessible way trying to start telling this story and elevating the importance. I mean, Bruce, you know, I'm heartbroken. I think we get 5 minutes to talk to you during our concert. I'm just trying to think what on earth are the questions that we could pitch at you that will enable you to share some of this stuff in just 5 minutes. But one of the other elements of the concert is that we are using soundscapes that we've taken, recorded from the amazing landscape and environment that we have here. Incredible bird songs, crickets, frogs, grass noises.
Fantastic.
And I was listening through to these samples last night, and it's music.
It is.
The noise of the Australian bush is pure music. It's harmonics of wind tones. It's buzzing of bees. Even bees are buzzing at a pitch. You know, I'm not saying remotely that clearly you must be an avid music fan because you work out in the bush and listen to this amazing sound all the time. But we are trying to marry, you know, telling stories by putting a beautiful music soundtrack to that. Just tell us a bit. Are you a music fan?
I'm a huge music fan. So I grew up playing a lot of instruments. I have a background in woodwind. I've jammed with James Morrison.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, back in my days.
Fun fact for all of those listening today.
There you go. Yes, don't hold me to picking up my sax again. So I started on the clarinet, went on to the tenor saxophone, and really enjoy my music. I'm really pleased to hear that we may be getting some John Butler inspiration coming out in the concert.
We have a John Butler piece on the theme of, it's called Oceans. So it won't be in your segment on biodiversity, it'll be in the ocean segment, but it will be in the concert.
I find his music particularly inspiring. I'm inspired by Ben Harper and Jack Johnson and others of that genre. But look, I'm really excited to hear the range of pieces that we're going to be listening to in this concert. I think it's a perfect match between the sounds of biodiversity and the sounds that we create in these environments. For me, it's also really nice to know, because there is actually science backing the fact that people feel the most grounded and most relaxed firstly when they're listening to classical music, but also when they're out in touch with nature. And I think if we can put both of these together in the one place, I think we're going to have one of the most relaxed, grounded audiences we've had in a long time.
Do you know, I was going to ask you, do music and the environment mix, and you've just completely answered that for me, Bruce.
Absolutely.
I'm excited to see, you know, if we can, by bringing the stories that you and our other guest speakers are going to be telling us to life through music, giving people a chance to reflect emotionally, cognitively on a theme, then, you know, perhaps we will reinforce some of these messages and some of the key things that you're talking about. And maybe, just maybe, people will go away not just thinking about it, but actually wanting to actively.
And I think you're absolutely right, because we get this. And when, from a very young age, and another one of my roles is I'm involved in a program called the STEM Professionals in Schools program, STEM standing for science, technology, engineering and maths. And that pairs us professional scientists with school science teachers. And part of our role there is to help improve and enhance the science curriculum in schools around Perth. And part of that, and what I've seen through that, and I've been involved at the primary school level, is that I see young kids, they get science. They just innately get it. But I've also seen that they innately get music. And both my boys have loved music from a very young age. They love to move, they love to groove, they love to play. And equally, they love to discover and explore the natural world. And it's really heartening for me to see that kids get it from a really young age and that they can take it all the way through.
Well, I love that your boys are kind of interested in both. I'm hoping, promise me, Bruce, you'll do all you can to keep their music going and their interest in...
Long may it last.
...science as well. I just want to ask, we could talk all day. And as I say, for our audience, I really hope you listen to this podcast, because if you don't, you're not going to get half of what Bruce has to offer at the concert, but you'll get some gorgeous little bits. But Bruce, one thing I know about you is that you are an astoundingly talented photographer. And if you want to see some of WA's incredible biodiversity, you can see some of the stunning photos that you've taken. Just quickly, how did you get into photography?
Oh, look, it was quite easy. I found myself regularly in the most amazing surroundings, and I was trying to capture that. I think the one thing that really draws me to photography is that no matter how hard you try and how long you do it for, you're always going to be a long way away from perfection. Perfection doesn't exist. Subjectivity is so important in photography, and so I can persist taking photos for the rest of my life, and I'll always have a thirst to go out and take more.
Just share your Instagram account with our listeners, because you please do yourselves a favour, go and see some of this man's amazing work. What is your Instagram?
So you can get a lot of my science posts on Dr. Bruce Weber. And then more of my other photography is on weber.photography. Weber with a double B.
Weber dot photography.
That's it. Yes.
Love it. Please do yourselves a favour, because the way that Bruce sees the world, you know, you can see his joy and his fascination, and that you do see the beauty in the smallest detail, and you capture that through the lens, which, you know, is just fabulous. I mean, when I first visited your page, just the colours and the textures, and it was like listening to a symphony to me. So, you know, absolutely congratulations on that. We need to leave you, Bruce. People are going to have to come on March 27th to the Perth Town Hall to buy a ticket to Performance for Our Planet, where we will be performing a stunning music soundscape to accompany some incredible stories and conversations with yourself and some other esteemed guests. But what can we just leave people with now that we can say is incredibly special or unique about Western Australia?
I think we've been around for a very, very long time. And that's really shaped the biodiversity we have today. We have some of the oldest soils on the planet, and those soils are incredibly nutrient poor. All of the really good stuff has been leached out of them over hundreds of thousands of years, and that makes our plants particularly special at trying to hang on and trying to survive. And that's helped the diversity we see these days. We have some of the oldest living organisms on the planet, the stromatolites, living here in WA. We have some of the oldest and longest indigenous culture on the planet here in WA, and they are absolutely integral in managing the landscapes that we have now and into the future. That, to me, puts us on a global leadership in terms of biodiversity. And it's the other thing for me that gets me every time is that the diversity you see from north to south and from east to west in WA is phenomenal. You could spend a lifetime exploring the biodiversity we have in this state and not be able to discover even half of it. So I'd encourage everyone to get out there and get back in touch with nature and use that as inspiration, because it can touch so many parts of your life if you get out there amongst it.
Brilliant. Great last words, Bruce. I can't thank you enough for joining us. You can come and hear Bruce as our special guest on Wednesday, the 27th of March at the Perth Town Hall. I think our doors open at 5:30 and you can purchase some West Australian singin full of West Australian botanicals.
Fantastic.
So we're pinching something from our beautiful environment. And we couldn't be more excited that you're going to join us. So, Bruce, thank you very much.
Not a problem, Bobby. Really looking forward to it.
A huge thanks to Blue Ocean Monitoring for partnering with us on Performance for Our Planet. Thanks also to our concert partner, the Oceans Institute, and our event partners, Singin and Voyager Estate, our brand partner, Anthology.
Hello, my name is Simon Illingworth, and I'm the Managing Director of Blue Ocean Monitoring from here in Perth, Australia. We are very pleased to be the presenting partner of a Performance for Our Planet from the Perth Symphony Orchestra to be held next week. As you're all aware, the oceans are vast, and we are pleased to provide products and services that allows us and our clients to monitor the conditions of the ocean both before, during, and after any work that they undertake. And we look forward to supporting the Perth Symphony Orchestra in this very important initiative. Thank you very much.
Finally, a massive thanks to our foundation partner AHG and sustainability partners Mindaroo Foundation and Tim Roberts Giving, whose support helps the orchestra do what we do every day. Thanks for listening to Perth Symphony Orchestra's Music on the Move.